Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we'll talk with Reed Nielsen and Scott Mariano, winners of the Evans Biography Award, for Restless Pilgrim, Andrew Jensen's Quest for Latter-day Saint History. Andrew Jensen undertook a lifelong quest to render the LDS historical record complete and comprehensive. As assistant church historian of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Jensen tirelessly carried out his office's archival mission and advocated for fixed record keeping to become a duty for Latter-day Saints. Reed Nielsen and Scott Mariano offer a new in-depth study of Jensen's long life and career. Their account follows Jensen from his arrival as a Danish immigrant in the 1860s Utah through trips around the world to secure documents from far-flung missions. We'll talk about it following the news. Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we'll be talking with Reed Nielsen and Scott Mariano, winners of this year's Evans Biography Award for Restless Pilgrim, Andrew Jensen's Quest for Latter-day Saint History. Andrew Jensen undertook a lifelong quest to render the LDS historical record complete and comprehensive. As assistant church historian of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Jensen tirelessly carried out his office's archival mission and advocated for fixed record-keeping to become a duty for Latter-day Saints. In their book, Reed Nielsen and Scott Mariano offer a new in-depth study of Jensen's long life and career. Their account follows Jensen from his arrival as a Danish immigrant in the 1860s in Utah through trips around the world to secure documents from far-flung missions and on to his public life as a newspaper columnist and interpreter of Latter-day Saint history. Reed Nielsen has served as the assistant church historian and recorder of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He is an award-winning author and editor of dozens of books on Latter-day Saints, co-editor of Pacific Apostle, the 1920-21 Diary of David O. McKay and the Latter-day Saint Island Missions. Reed Nielsen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. Great to be here.
Good to have you. Scott Mariano is a historian in the Church of Jesus Christ, the Church History Department of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and co-editor of A Voice in the Wilderness, the 1888-1930 General Conference Sermons of Mormon historian Andrew Jensen. Scott Mariano, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. Happy to be here.
Good to have you. So I'm connecting this up, Reed Nielsen. You served, I guess, in the same position that Andrew Jensen did. Is that what led you to an interest in his career?
Yes, I did have that opportunity there in the church history department to serve as assistant church historian. And during that time, trying to figure out what my role was, I had a lot of interest in Andrew Jensen and how he fulfilled the same role decades and decades earlier. So yes, I did feel a kinship with him.
Yeah. Scott Mariano, this previous volume, the General Conference Sermons of Andrew Jensen, I guess the assistant church historian, spoke in General Conference of the church during those years.
Yeah, so his General Conference sermons occurred at a time where broadcast technology obviously didn't exist. He becomes assistant church historian in 1897. So they're doing concurrent sessions of General Conference at the time, sometimes on the lawn of the Bureau of Information, wherever they could find time. He often wasn't the A-lister in the tabernacle. That was reserved for the Quorum of the Twelve, First Presidency, and other invited general authorities. Jensen was never a general authority, even though he was sustained as assistant church historian, but he would often speak in the assembly hall. And what struck us most about those General Conference sermons, I think Latter-day Saints today are used to hearing doctrine mixed with vignettes in General Conference, but Andrew Jensen was often giving straight history. He gave a notable sermon on all the schismatic movements in the Latter-day Saint movement, which is not a usual subject for General Conference. So we were struck by the detailed history that he laid out in those General Conference addresses, and that was really the impetus for that volume that I co-edited with Reed. The footnotes are robust. Latter-day Saints can learn a lot about their history just by diving into those sermons.
Oh, very interesting, yeah. So concurrent sessions. And on the lawn, in fact, I guess in some cases.
Yes.
So you gentlemen begin the book with kind of an interesting contrast. You write, on the morning of July 24th, 1934, Andrew Jensen, assistant church historian for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, boarded a United Airlines plane out of at Omaha, Nebraska Airport, bound for Salt Lake City. is paralleled a trip he took as a young man, decades earlier, where he was, you know, he was driving a wagon, I guess. And in fact, the Omaha newspaper, the headline is "Oxen Driver Will Fly." I love that. Reed Nielsen, tell me about this. That's quite the contrast in one lifetime.
Yes. Well, as authors, you're constantly trying to think, how do you begin a book and how do you end a book? How do you capture the reader's attention and how do you close out a life, particularly when you're writing biography? And I remember when I came across this vignette of him traveling by airplane in a couple of hours, what it took him before weeks and weeks to do in the 1860s, I was just so struck by the incredible time period that he overlapped with going from ox travel to airplane travel. And I marveled at his own personal reflections as he thought about his own experiences coming to Zion, or the Utah Territory, as they then called it, and then what it was like to be in Salt Lake once it had been established, once it had been settled, and had been become a thriving city there in the Intermountain West. I thought there's no better way to introduce who he was and the eras that he represented. Just imagine what that would have been to have walked across the plains and then flown across those same plains and looked down. He asked the pilot to fly a little lower than usual so he could see the trail below. And I just thought, along with Scott, what an incredible way to start this book.
So Scott Mariano, 1866, I think he took that wagon train, which was the last summer of, I guess, before the railroad had gotten sufficiently close to Salt Lake City that you'd take a kind of a full-ish wagon train to Salt Lake City.
Yeah, that's accurate. So he immigrates at age 9 in 1866 from Denmark. His family descends from just a small parish, a rural parish. They were in the peasant class. They convert in 1859 after hearing the gospel. The gospel had only been in Denmark for about 9 years at that point. They were Danish Lutherans before that, just like just about everyone else in Denmark at the time. And they immigrate, and it is this exciting experience to start for Jensen. They had been reading in Latter-day Saint newspapers, a Scandinavian Stern, about how wonderful Zion was. They saved up money, which would have cost them about $100 at the time. And they make their way by sea and then by rail to Wyoming, Nebraska. And then they go the rest of the way by wagon train. And Jensen proudly notes in his record that he practically walked the whole way. That was a source of pride for him at the time. So their immigration experience was typical of what would have occurred for most Danish Latter-day Saints. About 9 to 12,000 make the trek in the 19th century, and they're part of this larger European immigration movement that occurs to Utah at the time.
Reed Nielsen, tell me a little bit about the young Andrew Jensen, kind of finding his way, and I imagine he didn't immediately step into being a historian.
Great question, Tom. Scott and I were talking about this the other day. Andrew Jensen, I think, came to the Utah Territory very idealistic. As Scott just mentioned, he's excited to cross the plains with his family. They're going to Zion. They'd been thinking about this, excited for this. They saved for this. And I think that they had a great, great image of what Zion would actually be like. Well, this is still the Utah Territory, and it's still during the pioneer period. And many industries still weren't developed. And for a lot of young men like him, when they arrived in the Utah Territory, they didn't find all the financial opportunities that they anticipated and that they hoped for. And so I think at the beginning of the biography, in one or two chapters, we really try and focus on Andrew Jensen learning about himself, coming to understand who he is and what he's interested in. And he talks about being involved in a number of different industries, from agriculture to helping out with mining to helping out with lots of different things, but none of it really suits him. And he discovers that what he really wants to do, he wants to write, he wants to think, he wants to publish, he wants to live kind of what we talk about as the life of the mind. And he really wanted to be involved in the historical enterprise. He begins that by doing lots of translation of English materials, church materials largely, into Scandinavian languages, primarily Danish, for the Scandinavian community here in Utah. But I think Zion isn't quite what he imagined it was going to be. And I think he realized that he'd have to really become part of it to make it so.
What would you say about that, Scott Mariano, his development on the way to, I guess, to becoming this historian that we know?
Yeah, so he travels around, as Reed mentions, in his initial labor, selling wares, which he had learned to do. He's selling German lithographs back east. He's still fairly young at this point, but his family is quite impoverished. And so he learns to be an itinerant salesman by doing that. But of course, as Reed mentions, he finds no success. And he laments this in his journal constantly. This is not the life I imagined for myself. His parents end up divorced. His father takes a second wife. He lives down in Sevier County. He doesn't see his father much. His family's divided between Pleasant Grove and Sevier County. And he's thinking, what is this life in Zion? But of course, he grew up after he converts, reading church magazines, reading church scripture, and it had always fascinated him. So he began to dream up this idea of being a newspaper man. And he uses the Scandinavian community to his advantage. They're tight-knit. They need church resources translated into Danish. So he sees a market. But the market really never materializes for his publications. It's failure after failure. He does great work. He translates Joseph Smith's history into Danish. He produces a church chronology in Danish. He produces a church historical newspaper in Danish. But the Danish community didn't have a lot of money to throw at his publications at the time. And so he's often behind in his subscriptions. It's not a great life, but it's where he learns to begin to travel the American West all across these Utah towns and other expansions outside of Utah territory, trying to sell these publications. But his dream is always on joining the historian's office, not just because it would bring him status, but it would bring him a stable salary that he could use to support his family. So that's really the impetus for what became repeated requests to the church historians at the time to take him in full time. But of course, he had to prove his worth by doing this marketing of subscriptions for his historical publications before then.
So you really had to hustle. So Reed Nielsen, what tell me about how this did he always have an interest in history? Because it seems like he's entrepreneur, right? Journalist. But then he wanted to join the historian's office, for the salary, obviously, but probably other reasons as well.
Yeah, as we've gotten into his records, I think there's a real sense of kind of a self-awareness. He later writes in his memoir, in his autobiography published decades after this period, but he talks about feeling that perhaps from a Latter-day Saint theological perspective, that perhaps he was foreordained or prepared for the life of a historian. And that's something that would resonate with his fellow Latter-day Saints, that he had certain talents that he was given, but that he was supposed to further develop. And I think he took every opportunity to do so. I think very early on he had a sense of a connection with the past. He I think like many of his fellow immigrants and Latter-day Saint converts had a great love of the stories of the Restoration. He resonated with the lives of those early prophets and apostles, and he wanted to document their lives. He wanted to share their lives. He wanted to celebrate them. And as Scott mentioned, he found that he could do that by translating some of that material into Danish and then trying to get others to have that same enthusiasm, same excitement for what was going on. But I think it's important to note that whereas he had kind of idealistic visions of what people should be learning and studying and how they should be growing in their faith and understanding of the LDS past, I think most of his fellow Latter-day Saints during the 1860s and 70s in Utah, they were merely trying to make a living. They were trying to scratch at a living in the American West. This was still the frontier. It was difficult. These were tough times. And so I think perhaps he was ahead of his time, sensing that someday people would want and have the leisure time and the extra income, disposable income to spend on things that he saw as essential, but I think everyone else saw as luxuries that someday they might have, but they weren't necessary now.
Scott Mariano, I want to pause here to have you talk about is Andrew Jensen's personality. You in the epilogue, you write at the funeral. Of course, most funerals we wouldn't air the warts and the faults. So the general authorities who eulogized him did not talk about the unbridled ambition and the interpersonal challenges. Those are a couple of many virtues of the man. But some faults as well. So I'll start with this, Scott Mariano. Tell me a bit about the man himself.
Yeah, so Jensen was, it's in the title. This is where the term restless comes from. And a lot of his close associates marveled at his persistence. But it was that same persistence that would sometimes rub communities the wrong way. When he's finally taken into the assistant church historian, as assistant church historian, one of his tasks is to travel into local communities and gather up records or at least encourage better record keeping. He would also, though, market his publications, and he repeatedly asked the church historian Anton H. Lund and others to endorse his publications, have the local wards purchase them for their own reference works. And these stake presidents would write back to church administration and say, you've got to tell Andrew Jensen to quit marketing his publications in our communities. We can't afford them. We don't want them right now. It's not a priority for us. And that would constantly offend him. Jensen was a status seeker in many ways. And I don't mean that pejoratively. He constantly felt like he had something to achieve as a Dane who came out of the Danish peasantry, immigrated, pulled himself up by his bootstraps, and tried to make something of his life to support his family. That was his motivation. Mm. So he was searching for that status. And there were times in the early 20th century where they quit sustaining assistant church historians that rubbed him the wrong way. He felt like that status deserved recognition before the Latter-day Saints because it would help him accomplish his work. There were others that would interact with him when he traveled to missions who infamously would say, well, I would never take Andrew Jensen as my bosom companion, which at the time would mean, we're not going to be best friends. But they marveled at his commitment to documenting Latter-day Saint history, to traveling, spotting the gaps in the historical record, importing those records back to the historian's office. And as we remark in the epilogue, it took such a personality, I think, to travel in 1897 around the world when the church records were in disarray and bring them home. I think a lot of people saw his mission as unique to the man, but boy, Latter-day Saints everywhere and historians in the church history library today are certainly grateful for such a personality that brought to pass such a revolution in not just record keeping on the ground, but then bringing those records into the historian's office and making sure that they were preserved for generations to come.
You read Nielsen, I think he traveled, you say, what, a million miles in his life? That was certainly part of it. But maybe before we talk about that, I want to get your perspective on the man himself, his personality, the man himself.
Yes, I've thought about Andrew Jensen now off and on for over a decade and been writing about him even before this project with Scott. And a question that many people have asked me is, do you think you would have been friends with Andrew Jensen? I'm a historian. I'm very committed to the Latter-day Saint past and its preservation as Andrew Jensen is. We had a similar title, a similar role, working for the same organization. And so people have said, would you feel an affinity for him? Would you want to travel with him? Would you be friends with him? And it's interesting, as Scott pointed out, I think the very strengths that we celebrate in Andrew Jensen, the very things that made him who he was and that make him so valuable to historians today because of the records that he left, caused him to be a bit abrasive at times. And I think he'd admit that. I think he didn't suffer fools. He wanted to get things done. He knew what his mission was. He knew what he wanted to accomplish. And if you supported him, he thought you were wonderful and you got along just swimmingly. If you didn't share his vision, if you didn't share his enthusiasm, his excitement for the past, he struggled with you and you likely struggled with him. I think we've all been in situations where we've had a family member or a friend or someone in a local congregation or workplace that is just so single-eyed minded, just so doggedly determined to do something that's so important to them, that sometimes it's hard to be around them because even if you like what they're doing, you can never match their enthusiasm, and they kind of look down on you a little bit, or maybe they call into question your loyalties or your contributions or whatever. And so I even wonder sometimes, even for those of us like Scott and I who love the Latter-day Saint past, how would we have interacted with other with Andrew Jensen? Would we have enjoyed him? I hope so, but I'm sure we'd want a break at times and just say, I got to step back from this. I'm just not as intense as you are on this particular topic, even though this is what I've devoted my life to. He was extraordinary in that way. And in fact, we make the argument in the book that no one, not a single historian or leader or fellow Latter-day Saint, made the same contributions to the gathering and the collecting of church history that Andrew Jensen did. Not then, not now, not, I don't see it happening in the future. His time period and his office and his personality allowed him to do something truly unique.
Let's take a brief break. We'll discuss more, much more to talk about. The book is Restless Pilgrim, Andrew Jensen's Quest for Latter-day Saint History. The authors are with me, Reed Nielsen and Scott Mariano. They're winners of this year's Evans Biography Award, and they, along with the Evans Handcart Prize winner, who this year is Amy Tenner Thurio, for her book Slavery in Zion, a documentary and genealogical history of Black lives and Black servitude in the Utah Territory, 1847-1862. They'll be receiving those prizes on Friday, 9 a.m., and that will be in the Eccles Conference Center, rooms 205 to 207. 9 a.m. on Friday. They'll discuss their work, followed by a book signing. That event is free and open to the public. We'll have more following this break. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. I'm talking today with the winners of the Evans Biography Award. They are Reed Nielsen and Scott Mariano, and the book is Restless Pilgrim, Andrew Jensen's Quest for Latter-day Saint History. I'll start with Scott Mariano on this one. Tell me about some of the accomplishments. We talked about the kind of the doggedness of the man, the persistence sometimes turned into abrasiveness, but Andrew Jensen did have a very clear vision for what he wanted to accomplish, and he did accomplish much of that.
Yeah, his vision was guided by an early understanding of a divine mandate to keep a complete record. It comes from the Doctrine and Covenants. He held to that vision, and he felt like he could render a historical record complete. So he attempts, his vision is to reach all the wards, stakes, missions, units of the church. He felt like church history was being created on the ground around the world in these units. And so he tries to put together a complete timeline of the church, which comes out of his church chronology and then transitions into a journal history of the church, which is a day-to-day account of the activities of the church as he's compiling and scrapbooking that in the historian's office. He produces four volumes of biographical encyclopedias trying to document both church leaders and average Latter-day Saints. And again, the mission for him is to render the historical record complete. And he only gets into the historian's office in the 1890s, as the church is emerging post-manifesto out of polygamy prosecutions, the records of the church had scattered around Utah, and he was tasked specifically to put those records in order. They felt like the only one that could do that was Andrew Jensen, because he loved to travel and he had the commitment to do it. And so he gets his start really formally as an assistant church historian, traveling around trying to put those records in order, with the intention of documenting a complete history of the church. He doesn't fully do that, he feels, until his final year of his life, when he publishes the Encyclopedic History of the Church, which is an account unit by unit of all the wards, branches, missions of the church. He feels like it's his magnum opus, and the church puts its official stamp on his book, something they hadn't really done for all of his other volumes. And it was the career achievement of his life to do that. But of course, he has other accomplishments beyond just producing historical volumes. He produces 850 volumes of both manuscript and published history over his lifetime. But he's also an ambassador to the Scandinavian community. He regularly speaks to Scandinavian Latter-day Saints, translating the culture and history of the church to them. So really, he serves multiple roles, but that's just a list of a few of the achievements that we document in this book. And there are pitfalls, there are mistakes. He's tasked with going down in the 1890s and documenting the history of the Mountain Meadows Massacre. He produces a history of Joseph Smith's plural wives that goes a little astray. And he has moments where he feels like he's underappreciated. He almost quits a handful of times. And so we really let the personality and successes of and failures of Jensen's life shine through in this volume. And it challenges readers. Perhaps the most comments that I get about the book is on our previous topic before the break on whether or not we would like Andrew Jensen, whether or not he was actually successful in his mission, and we answer all of those questions in this book.
So Reed Nielsen, we could talk a little bit about his accomplishments as well. And this was, as you write in the book, a race against time, right? As he starts out, some of the leaders are getting old. Their memories will be lost if he doesn't record them. And it's not race not only against time, but around the world. He gets on a plane eventually in his career and goes out and tries to recover these records from far-flung areas of the church.
Well, he does. He does everything, uses everything at his disposal to try and capture those records. And I do agree with you, Tom. I think that he was constantly racing time. He'd talk about that, that people were dying, that the communities, their founders were disappearing, that if he didn't get this done now, who would do it? That those records were simply lost, that every time someone passed away, they took with them their most valuable treasure, which was their memories. You mentioned about his around the world, and in terms of accomplishments, something that I've always felt very strongly about. In 1895, before he's a formal member of the Church History Department in Salt Lake, or the Historian's Office, as it was then called, he convinces the first presidency that nothing has been done for record keeping outside of North America, outside of the central stakes or congregational units here in the Intermountain West. So he convinces them to let him take a 2-year journey around the world. And now this is all by ship. Again, this predated the airplane by about a decade, and commercial travel by several decades. And so he's traveling literally for 2 years by himself to all the far-flung missions of the church. So he goes all throughout the South Pacific, travels pretty much everywhere except for South America and Africa. And he sees the church in embryo. He sees what's going on before there were any stakes outside of North America, before there were any temples that now dot the earth, as Latter-day Saints like to say. And he goes to these places and he's treated very, very well. He's working with mission presidents, with missionaries, with local members, trying to gather up their histories that were in very poor states of preservation. Imagine the early manuscript histories written on paper, but there they were in the tropics of the Pacific, where there was no humidity control, excuse me, humidity control, or anything else that would preserve these records. And what he does is he simply crates everything up. He says, we're going to kind of gather these things, almost like the British in the Empire model of taking everything back to the British Museum or the galleries of London, and we're going to have it all in Salt Lake City. That was his idea, and it models what happened to him as a young child, that he was gathered. He was encouraged to come to Utah, come to Zion, bring what he had with him, and so he did the same thing with the historical treasures of the church. He gathered all the cultural patrimony and records of the native saints in far-flung lands and brought them all to Utah. Now, that's not what the Church History Department is doing today. They've decentralized, and they're asking local Latter-day Saints and others to keep their records in local repositories. And that's something Scott and I have both been a part of as employees of the Church History Department over the last many years. So that's exciting. However, had Andrew Jensen allowed those records to stay in those repositories, my guess is our record today wouldn't be nearly as rich or as complete or as helpful as it is today. So I'm very grateful that he had the foresight then to gather the records, but I'm very grateful that now leaders of the Church History Department are sending those records back to those lands so the local saints can enjoy their own records. It's a shift in approach, but I think it's where we need to be.
So, Reed Nielsen, just a follow-up. I understand one of Andrew Jensen's great ambitions was, let's systematize the process of gathering history, right? And I could imagine him badgering local leaders. you guys need to write your own histories, right, and send them in. That does happen nowadays in the church, but I guess it wasn't in his day.
No, it wasn't. And I think technology has so much to do with that. Technology and training. For instance, Scott, who I authored this volume with, one of his greatest contributions is he's a professional archivist. He has deep archival training in addition to a master's in history, and he has the mind of an archivist. He understands how to systematize records and understands what are the industry standards and the best ways that other repositories have taken into account their records and cataloged them and made them discoverable. Unlike a professional like Scott, Andrew Jensen had no historical training. You have to remember, he never spent any time in higher education, never got a degree, never had any professional training of his own, yet he did the best that he could to try and figure out what the standards for the church were going to be. And then he had to help convince and influence and persuade church leaders to put the resources behind those initiatives and those programs. Sometimes they worked well, and other times he was left wanting. But every time I get on a computer or a catalog or a database, I think of Andrew Jensen. I think, boy, he was incredible with paper and pen. And what could he have done with electronic records today? How could he have organized and gathered and created repositories that would just blow our minds had he had the technology and training that someone like a Scott Mariano has today?
Let's take another brief break. We'll come back, talk more about Andrew Jensen. The book is Restless Pilgrim, Andrew Jensen's Quest for Latter-day Saint History. And we're talking with the authors Reed Nielsen and Scott Mariano. They're winners of this year's Evans Biography Award for this book. And they will be in Logan on Friday. The award presentation will happen in the Eccles Conference Center on the USU campus, Friday, 9 a.m. The event is free and open to the public. Authors will discuss their work following the book signing that will take place at the end of the event. Also there will be Amy Tanner Thirio. She is author of the Evans Handcart Award winner, Slavery in Zion, a documentary and genealogical history of Black lives and Black servitude in Utah Territory, 1847-1862. We'll have more following this break. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. I'm talking today with the winners of the Evans Biography Award. They are Reed Nielsen and Scott Mariano, and the book is Restless Pilgrim, Andrew Jensen's Quest for Latter-day Saint History. I'll start with Scott Mariano on this one. Tell me about some of the accomplishments. We talked about the kind of the doggedness of the man, the persistence, sometimes turned into abrasiveness. But Andrew Jensen did have a very clear vision for what he wanted to accomplish, and he did accomplish much of that.
Yeah, his vision was guided by an early understanding of a divine mandate to keep a complete record. It comes from the Doctrine and Covenants. He held to that vision, and he felt like he could render a historical record complete. So he attempts, his vision is to reach all the ward, stakes, missions, units of the church. He felt like church history was being created on the ground around the world in these units. And so he tries to put together a complete timeline of the church, which comes out of his church chronology, and then transitions into a journal history of the church, which is a day-to-day account of the activities of the church as he's compiling and scrapbooking that in the historian's office. He produces four volumes of biographical encyclopedias trying to document both church leaders and average Latter-day Saints. And again, the mission for him is to render the historical record complete. And he only gets into the historian's office in the 1890s as the church is emerging post-manifesto out of polygamy prosecutions. The records of the church had scattered around Utah, and he was tasked specifically to put those records in order. They felt like the only one that could do that was Andrew Jensen because he loved to travel and he had the commitment to do it. And so he gets his start really formally as an assistant church historian, traveling around trying to put those records in order with the intention of documenting a complete history of the church. He doesn't fully do that, he feels, until his final year of his life when he publishes the Encyclopedic History of the Church, which is an account unit by unit of all the wards, branches, missions of the church. He feels like it's his magnum opus, and the church puts its official stamp on his book, something they hadn't really done for all of his other volumes. And it was the career achievement of his life to do that. But of course, he has other accomplishments beyond just producing historical volumes. He produces 850 volumes of both manuscript and published history over his lifetime. But he's also an ambassador to the Scandinavian community. He regularly speaks to Scandinavian Latter-day Saints, translating the culture and history of the church to them. So really, he serves multiple roles, but that's just a list of a few of the achievements that we document in this book. And there are pitfalls, there are mistakes. He's tasked with going down in the 1890s and documenting the history of the Mountain Meadows Massacre. He produces a history of Joseph Smith's plural wives that goes a little astray. And he has moments where he feels like he's underappreciated. He almost quits a handful of times. And so we really let the personality and successes of and failures of Jensen's life shine through in this volume. And it challenges readers. Perhaps the most comments that I get about the book is on our previous topic before the break on whether or not we would like Andrew Jensen, whether or not he was actually successful in his mission, and we answer all of those questions in this book.
So Reed Nielsen, we could talk a little bit about his accomplishments as well. And this was, as you write in the book, a race against time, right? As he starts out, some of the leaders are getting old. Their memories will be lost if he doesn't record them. And it's not race not only against time, but around the world. He gets on a plane eventually in his career and goes out and tries to recover these records from far-flung areas of the church.
Well, he does. He does everything, uses everything at his disposal to try and capture those records. And I do agree with you, Tom. I think that he was constantly racing time. He'd talk about that people were dying, that the communities, their founders were disappearing, that if he didn't get this done now, who would do it? That those records were simply lost, that every time someone passed away, they took with them their most valuable treasure, which was their memories. You mentioned about his around the world, and in terms of accomplishments, something that I've always felt very strongly about. In 1895, before he's a formal member of the Church History Department in Salt Lake, or the Historian's Office, as it was then called, he convinces the first presidency that nothing has been done for record keeping outside of North America, outside of the central stakes or congregational units here in the Intermountain West. So he convinces them to let him take a 2-year journey around the world. Now, this is all by ship. Again, this predated the airplane by about a decade, and commercial travel by several decades. And so he's traveling literally for 2 years by himself to all the far-flung missions of the church. So he goes all throughout the South Pacific, travels pretty much everywhere except for South America and Africa. And he sees the church in embryo. He sees what's going on before there were any stakes outside of North America, before there were any temples that now dot the earth, as Latter-day Saints like to say. And he goes to these places and he's treated very, very well. He's working with mission presidents, with missionaries, with local members, trying to gather up their histories that were in very poor states of preservation. Imagine the early manuscript histories written on paper, but there they were in the tropics of the Pacific, where there was no humidity control, excuse me, humidity control, or anything else that would preserve these records. And what he does is he simply crates everything up. He says, we're going to kind of gather these things, almost like the British in the Empire model of taking everything back to the British Museum or the galleries of London. and we're going to have it all in Salt Lake City. That was his idea. And it models what happened to him as a young child, that he was gathered. He was encouraged to come to Utah, come to Zion, bring what he had with him. And so he did the same thing with the historical treasures of the church. He gathered all the cultural patrimony and records of the native saints in far-flung lands and brought them all to Utah. Now, that's not what the Church History Department is doing today. They've decentralized and they're asking local Latter-day Saints and others to keep their records in local repositories. And that's something that Scott and I have both been a part of as employees of the Church History Department over the last many years. So that's exciting. However, had Andrew Jensen allowed those records to stay in those repositories, my guess is our record today wouldn't be nearly as rich or as complete or as helpful as it is today. So I'm very grateful that he had the foresight then to gather the records, but I'm very grateful that now leaders of the Church History Department are sending those records back to those lands so the local saints can enjoy their own records. It's a shift in approach, but I think it's where we need to be.
So, Reed Nielsen, just a follow-up. Understand one of Andrew Jensen's great ambitions was, let's systematize the process of gathering history, right? And I could imagine him badgering local leaders. You guys need to write your own histories, right? And send them in. That does happen nowadays in the church, but I guess it wasn't in his day.
No, it wasn't. And I think technology has so much to do with that. Technology and training. For instance, Scott, who I authored this volume with, one of his greatest contributions is he's a professional archivist. He has deep archival training in addition to a master's in history, and he has the mind of an archivist. He understands how to systematize records and what understands what are the industry standards and the best ways that other repositories have taken into account their records and cataloged them and made them discoverable. Unlike a professional like Scott, Andrew Jensen had no historical training. You have to remember, he never spent any time in higher education, never got a degree, never had any professional training of his own. Yet he did the best that he could to try and figure out what the standards for the church were going to be. And then he had to help convince and influence and persuade church leaders put the resources behind those initiatives and those programs. Sometimes they worked well, and other times he was left wanting. But every time I get on a computer or a catalog or a database, I think of Andrew Jensen. I think, boy, he was incredible with paper and pen. And what could he have done with electronic records today? How could he have organized and gathered and created repositories that would just blow our minds? Had he had the technology and training that someone like a Scott Mariano has today.
Let's take another brief break. We'll come back, talk more about Andrew Jensen. The book is Restless Pilgrim, Andrew Jensen's Quest for Latter-day Saint History. And we're talking with the authors Reed Nielsen and Scott Mariano. They're winners of this year's Evans Biography Award for this book. And they will be in Logan on Friday. The award presentation will happen in the Eccles Conference Center on the USU campus, Friday, 9 a.m. The event is free and open to the public. Authors will discuss their work following the book signing that will take place at the end of the event. Also there will be Amy Tanner Theriault. She is author of the Evans Handcart Award winner, Slavery in Zion, a documentary and genealogical history of Black lives and Black servitude in Utah Territory, 1847-1862. We'll have more following this break. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking with Reed Nielsen and Scott Mariano. They're authors of Restless Pilgrim, Andrew Jensen's Quest for Latter-day Saint History. They're winners of this year's Evans Biography Award, distributed through the USU Mountain West Center. So I'll start with Scott Mariano on this one. I'm just reading here. I want to get into the style of history and this era of history. As we mentioned, Andrew Jensen was not a professional historian. It wasn't degreed, in that way. I'll just read. Jensen's career ended before he could drink deeply from the skepticism of postmodernist scholars and their challenge to definitive claims of scientific history. For Jensen, sources he gathered made historical events absolutely discernible. So you also write that he did not partake of he eschewed the romantic and flowery style of certain popular histories of his day. So tell me a little bit about his style, I guess, and situate him in the arc of the historian's craft.
Yeah, so Jensen, there's this really interesting remark that Anton H. Lund, who is the church historian in the early 20th century and also a member of the First Presidency, says about Jensen at General Conference. He says Jensen is as happy as a placer miner when he finds a new fact, as if he's found a nugget of gold. And for Jensen, it was all about mining the historical record for the facts that he found relevant and compiling those facts into a usable form that could be referenced by others. When he is coming of age in the historical era that he's operating in, Romanticism was still a writing style that was prevalent. Parley P. Pratt's autobiography reads that way, and of course he reads that. He partakes of the writings of George Q. Cannon and others. And he, because he's not trained, as Reed mentioned before, in any scholarly sense or formal sense beyond his education in Denmark, just doesn't write that way. He writes factual. And he's operating in a time where the historical profession is professionalizing. The American Historical Association is founded in 1884. Skepticism is becoming in vogue within the historical record, and they're interrogating the historical record in ways that wasn't done from the Protestant histories of old that Jensen grew up reading. So Jensen operates within that style, but he doesn't have the formal scholarly training to professionalize in the same way. But he does believe in that scientific model of history that the American Historical Association is pushing, in that the truth can be found out through historical facts. And if you compile that in the right way, the historical record could be rendered complete. Of course, later on, that is challenged well after Jensen's death in 1941, where the historian is now read into the record. The postmodernist turn in the historical profession challenges the notion of any sort of objective history that Jensen felt like he was producing. But he operates well before that, and he believes that any history he puts into the historian's office, including his compiled manuscript histories, are complete and referenceable and can be trusted as incontrovertible historical fact in that scientific method way.
Reed Nielsen, I want to read another passage that gets into his mind, right? Andrew Jensen's mind and his purpose in his own mind as a historian. Jensen, of course, you write, was careful in verifying historical facts, but he wrote and gathered from the perspective of a Danish immigrant, convert and journalist turned historian, a defender of the faith. This is what struck me. Jensen feared historical silences. The silence of faithful Latter-day Saint who, without learning and retelling the true story of the church, would be influenced by the church's critics. So in that way, he's history as, I guess, a defense of the faith, reinforcer of the faith.
Absolutely. I think he was an apologist in the best sense of that term, meaning defender of the faith. He saw the historical record as a bulwark against skepticism, against modernism, against unbelief. He really felt, I think, that if you truly just understood the records, if you understood the history, if you read the narratives, that the truth claims of the church would be apparent. And so I think he wrote that way. I don't think he ever wanted to do anything that would demean or diminish the church or its leaders in any sense. At the same time, he felt that it was very important to be accurate in telling the truth. And so there are some instances in his historical work where he fell over on one side or the other, depending on who you talk to. Scott mentioned earlier about his treatment of the Mountain Meadows. He was sent down to write about the Mountain Meadows to interview some of the older members of the community there in southern Utah that were going to be passing away. And the First Presidency sent him on a very sensitive mission to go down and get some affidavits down there, which have been published in more recent years here through BYU Studies. At the time, however, he got those histories, he fulfilled the responsibility from the First Presidency, but then he didn't make those records known. That was church work product, And even in his own accounting of the Mountain Meadows Massacre, even though he knew certain things differently than kind of the traditional account, he went with kind of the church party line on it when I think he even knew better. And he could have been more successful. He could have been more honest in an instance like that. So on another occasion that Scott referred to, he took it upon himself to detail the plural wives of Joseph Smith and wrote not an expose, but a defense of Joseph Smith and the fact that he had practiced plural marriage in Nauvoo. This was at a time when the Reorganized Church, now Community of Christ, some of their leaders, including some of the surviving relatives of Joseph Smith, were here in town in Salt Lake City. And they were railing against the church and saying that Joseph Smith never practiced plural marriage, that he never would have done something like that, that their mother, Aunt Emma Smith, had told to them that her husband had never engaged in plural marriage. Well, again, in this case, Andrew Jensen went probably further the other direction that church leaders wanted him to, and he documents by gathering affidavits of women then living in Utah who had been married and sealed to Joseph Smith to prove that, in fact, Joseph had engaged in plural marriage. Well, both of those are examples where he tried to do what he thought was best for the church. Some of his efforts were appreciated, and others didn't go over so well.
Scott Marion, I want to follow up with that. I'll just read here from the book. We talked about silences. He was against gaps in church history. He wanted to bolster faith. But you go on to say his perspective also did little to resolve other silences. His histories were often male-centered, absent of details about indigenous populations, short on church history subjects seen as controversial. Some of that Reed Nielsen was talking about, all tendencies that his contemporaries were also not immune to. Part of this was the era, the style of the time. And I guess part of this blind spots that many historians had at this time.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, Tom. And he emerges in an era where the church felt somewhat contingent or challenged. We have to remember in 1890, prior to Wilford Woodruff issuing the manifesto that would end or at least initiate the end of plural marriage, the church felt like it was hanging in a balance. And this is when Jensen is beginning to be taken a little more seriously as a historian. He takes a tour in 1888 to travel back to the historic sites and writes into the Deseret News about his trek to the historic sites to stoke the imagination of Latter-day Saints about former persecutions, to rally Latter-day Saints in their faith around the church. And so he emerges in the historical profession that he's operating in an era of defense. And that's what a lot of Latter-day Saint leaders who wrote at this time were participating in as well. They felt like the church needed to be defended. And so in that time of defense, certain historical facts could be looked over or set aside for now to protect or defend the church. Of course, as his career progresses into the 1920s and 30s, he's now honored and revered in the American West as a pioneer, as a participant in the colonizing of the West. And so his own perception evolves with the perception of the church after the church is seen as more American and mainstream in the 1920s and 30s, and he could be celebrated as a revered pioneer. And he partakes in that and relishes in that pioneer spirit on Pioneer Trail commemorations and enjoys being seen in that way. So we can't ignore the fact that Jensen's experiences in the church color what he chooses to write about. And that is, of course, true of everyone. They're ignoring indigenous history. They're choosing to be seen as pioneer colonizers. It's often male-centered, although he does a good job in his later biographical encyclopedia of bringing in female Latter-day Saints into the record. But all of these tendencies emerge out of the culture that the church is participating in the time.
Just have 2 or 3 minutes left. I definitely want to get this in. This fascinated me. The way he saw himself, I'll direct this to Reed Nielsen. I'll just read from the book. The passion and zeal he sometimes displayed in his calls for improved record keeping stem from a deeper spiritual understanding of what it meant to be a record keeper. He believed Latter-day Saint doctrine supported the notion of a parallel record in heaven. So I guess he's not only writing a history for here, but for that's going to be recorded in heaven as well, in his mind.
Yes, this does come out of LDS theology, this idea that there are parallel records and that if things are recorded on earth, then they'll be recorded in heaven. Conversely, if they're not recorded on earth, they're not recorded in heaven. And that goes for ordinances of salvation or exaltation, as Latter-day Saints would call them. He thought very deeply about the passages that are found in the Doctrine and Covenants or other parts of scripture or prophetic writings where they talk about the importance of keeping a record. He really saw an incredible value there. In fact, he really felt that one of the main signifiers of the truth claims of the church were the keeping of its records. And on one occasion, he said, quoting the prophet Joseph Smith, that wherever the records of the church are, that's where the truth claims can also be. At a time when there were so many different divergent groups that were breaking apart and scattering, he said, no, one of those signs of the true church will be its record keeping, its efforts there. And he felt very dearly about that.
Well, we have reached the end of our time. Much more we could talk about. You'll need to read the book. The book is Restless Pilgrim, Andrew Jensen's Quest for Latter-day Saint History. We've been talking with the authors, Reed Nielsen and Scott Mariano. They're winners of this year's Evans Biography Award. And they will be in Logan on the campus of Utah State University on Friday. 9 a.m. is the awards ceremony. The authors will discuss their work, followed by a book signing. It'll take place at the end of the event. The event is free and open to the public. Along with the Evans Biography Award winners, who I've been just talking to, the Evans Handcart Award winner, Amy Tanner Thirio, will be there as well. She won the Handcart Award for Slavery in Zion, a documentary and genealogical history of black lives and black servitude in the Utah Territory, 1847 to 1862. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Reed Nielsen, thank you.
Thank you, Tom. It's been a delight.
Thank you. Scott Mariano, thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Enjoyed it.
And thanks, everybody. We'll go out as we do on Tuesdays with our Crossroads feature. Thank you again.
Every rural person and place has a story. Change is part of that story. Rural Utah at a Crossroads is part of the Smithsonian Traveling Exhibit Crossroads, Change in Rural America, which explores the changing meaning of rural life and identity. Utah Humanities is touring Crossroads to 8 rural communities across Utah in 2024. As part of the tour, Utah Humanities and Utah Public Radio are partnering with exhibition hosts to interview local residents about change in their communities. This interview with Richard Tatton was recorded at the Utah State University Eastern Campus in Price, Utah.
My father had an insurance agency here, and he had a totally disabling stroke while we were in Ohio, and basically wondered, what the heck are we doing here when the family needs us there? So I quit and we moved back, and Sandra and I ran the agency till we retired a few years ago. I'd say that it's pretty static right now, and incidental to age and stuff and getting around, I don't mind that. I like to see it growing when we're in business, but there's a comfort level in not too fast a growth like a lot of places are getting. We're getting started in the elections for the local officials, and you can see there's more interest in it from competent people, if that makes any sense. It's good just to see the enthusiasm that's there for some of those positions. That's fun to, or rewarding, I guess, a better word, to see people that are enthused about doing that and think first of what's best for the community and not for their own personal gain. I've been fortunate in that I was able to serve on city council and did planning and zoning for the county on a volunteer basis for 30 years. And so it's fun to be in a community where you can watch those things and see what's going on. And you get a better appreciation for all the what seem non-consequential things that you have to think about, the utilities and the accessibility, and also the land itself, the ground, is it suitable for development? If somebody wanted to build, you have to be zoned correctly. So if it's a commercial or an agricultural zone, they got to get it zoned residential. And then you need to look at what are the services that are available on that parcel, like water and electricity and those things. So sewer, you have to watch that. And is it going to infringe on somebody else? And I enjoyed that. It was fun working with the developers. And like anything, we had a few developers come through that were in it just to try and make a quick buck, and you can kind of discourage them. And the city itself has had a couple of developments, but the county has quite a bit of development residential, so it spread out into the county, the growth in the area. I think it'll look pretty much the same, but with an increase, just because every place is increasing in population, so you get more retail and business. I've worked with a guy who has a steel fabrication operation here, and he's looking at bringing another business to the area. And so as the mines go down or lay off, it's creating good jobs opportunity-wise for the citizens, so it works out real well that way. I look to just kind of normal growth for the community. Sometimes you wish it would go a little faster, but you see some, you're around it, you see the communities that have just exploded, and that creates a lot of just extra problems because of the population increase.
Rural Utah at a Crossroads is produced by Maya Shumway. It is a collaboration between Utah Public Radio, Utah Humanities, and the community hosts of Crossroads, Change in Rural America, a Smithsonian Museum on Main Street exhibition made possible in the Beehive State by Utah Humanities. Support for Museum on Main Street has been provided by the United States Congress. Broadcasts of Rural Utah at a Crossroads on UPR is supported by our members,